Hello, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to another edition of the Tape Trader's Guide to 90s Pro Wrestling. This is your host, JD Sloan, and I am here with a short interview that I did with the one, the only, Duke the Dumpster Drosy. So, Duke the Dumpster Drosy is, you know, I guess, famous from the 90s, the early to mid-90s. Someone that I definitely grew up watching during the beginning of my fandom. I've used Duke. This would be the second time, I think. I used him once in Rome, Georgia, for an autograph signing for Superstars of Wrestling. And then I used him again a few months ago for a show in Caverna, Kentucky. The Caverna Super Show for Terry England and his UCW group out of Kentucky. We were sitting around waiting for the doors to open. I said, hey, let me grab a few minutes with you on the podcast. He said, sure. We really only covered one thing, and that's his time working for the German promotion, the German, Austria. I'm not sure where else they all toured out there, but that's all we did. It was after his WWF run. I would definitely highly suggest that you follow him on social media, whether it's Twitter or Facebook, because he tells some of the best, funniest stories. He's a super open guy, he's got a great sense of humor, on himself, his run, and real open. I think that's one of the coolest things about it. The very first time that I used him, it was right, he had been out of the spotlight for years after his drug arrest. And I actually didn't even know that he had lost a leg the first time that I reached out to him. But it was so early in his kind of return to wrestling, I guess is a good way to say it, that I didn't know. Like, I remember when I first reached out to him and wanted to see if he wanted to work together, I thought, I wonder, you know, how open he'll be about his arrest. From following him on Facebook, I would see pictures of him and working out, and he's in, you know, phenomenal shape. He's in, you know, 10 times better shape than I am, and I'm you know, probably 15 years, 20 years younger than him. Phenomenal shape, but I'm seeing pictures of him doing leg presses and stuff, and it's captioned, you know, one leg man. I'm thinking, like, you know, what the hell happened? Because I hadn't heard anything about him losing his foot or anything like that. And then through following him on Facebook, man, like, he talks about everything. He talks about every different thing. The good, the bad, the ugly, the funny, the fucked up, the whatever. I mean, you know, he's open, and he's got a great sense of humor, great way of writing, great stories to tell. So, you know, when I wanted to grab a little bit of audio with him, I thought, like, let's just grab just a little bit of audio. You know, this doesn't have to be a big thing. Let's put over his social media. Let's make sure to drive an audience that way. You can interact directly with him. You can, you know, send him questions, send him messages, you know, buy autographs from him, whatever. You can do it directly through his social media. And so that's what I thought. Like, let's just ask a few questions. This is sometimes it's a 90s podcast, so let's ask him some questions about the 90s and let's talk about the CWA in Europe and his time over there and working for Otto Swantz and everything like that. So we're going to play a little bit of audio, but the first thing I wanted to do is I wanted to go to his Wikipedia page. And I don't know how accurate his Wikipedia page, and there's not a whole lot of stuff on here, but it kind of starts off with Duke the Dumpster Drosy. He was trained by Bobby Wales in Miami, Florida. His first match was in February of 1990, defeating Johnny Blade. He wrestled all throughout the Florida Independence before he got his break with the WWE. In 1993, he was called the Garbage Man and was actually the PWI 500's number 500, Mr. 500. And since I am who I am and I have the things I have the PWI 500 from 1993. So let's read what the caption says under 500, the Garbage Man. 6'5", 306 pounds, not listed last year. That's right. He insists on wrestling in a sanitation engineer's uniform, hopefully clean and pressed. Great trash talker, of course. Chicago native, Florida competitor, in return for guarantees, performs janitorial duties. So that was his little bio, his blurb from the PWI 500 in 1993. Following the 500, he signed with WWF. And on his Wikipedia, it actually says that when he first got in the WWE, chants were chanting Mr. 500, which I find that to be a little bit hard to believe because I don't know how many WWF fans necessarily followed the PWI 500 and were that, you know, smartish. But the next time I see him, I want to ask him if that, you know, if that's legit. If he, people were chanting 500 to him as he's walking down to the ring in the WWF. Then it goes off into his 1994. He was signed by the WWF and was given Duke the Dumpster Drosy gimmick, which it was the same thing that he had been doing before. He also wrestled as Rocco Gibraltar on the Florida Independence, which I didn't even know that he was called the Garbage Man. I wonder if that was something that PWI named him, not knowing his name or whatever. A cool thing on Facebook, if you follow him, he actually posted the video that he made, his little highlight sizzle reel that he sent to the WWF that showed him cutting a promo, you know, high spots in the ring. He edited it himself, and he posted it on Facebook not too long ago, which is a really cool thing to see and watch. And, you know, this is how the dude got signed. He sent this to you know, Stanford, and they saw it. They liked what they saw, and they decided to sign the guy. So he debuted on Monday Night Raw, defeating Barry Horowitz on May 23rd. In 1994, in the summer of 94, he started working with Jerry Lawler, which I remember that really well. Lawler and Duke's matches, always fun. Duke and Hunter, good series. But, you know, he wasn't... Duke was one of those weird guys to me, at least. I am 38, so, you know, 94 I would have been 13, in 95 I would have been 14, 96 I would have been 15, so on and so on. But I remember always looking at Duke as being that, to me, he would have been a perfect Intercontinental Champion. He really would have. He always seemed like he was really over. You know, big smiling baby face. I felt like people always got behind him. He had a lot of energy when he got in and out of the ring. I always liked him. Not just because I think he's a cool guy now or anything like that, but I remember being, a young teenager. Of course, shit wasn't counterculture yet. You know, we weren't, things weren't blood and guts, sex and tits and ass, culturally wise, yet. You know, 93, 94, 95, things were a lot different in the world. Society was much different still at this point, and things started to change. And so I don't know if Duke the Dumpster Drosy could have properly changed over to that attitude era of not just wrestling, but again, like I was saying, pop culture. I don't know if he could have necessarily... as that character, but then again, I mean, no one's to say he couldn't have changed his character, or that character itself couldn't have evolved. You know, before he left, he had shaved his head and I think maybe turning heel. But he was definitely changing right before he left the company. But you know, he was just one of those guys. He left the WWF and went out and went to Europe, and that's where we start off our conversation, is talking about that. And again, you know, if you have the opportunity, follow him on either Twitter or Facebook. Just, his name is Mike Drosy. Look him up, add him, communicate with him, interact with him. You know, he posts constantly. He's a funny dude. And if you see his name pop up on an autograph signing near you, you know, go out there and get his autograph, man. I mean, the guy's a good guy. You know, he's one of those humble guys that's like, sometimes you work with these guys that are, you know, they had a run, you know, they had a run somewhere and made a little bit of money for a short period of time, and it's like they still think they're that person, and definitely not this guy. This guy is open and honest. He's a good person, down to earth. He's definitely someone to meet if you have that opportunity to meet him. So without further ado, let's get to his interview. All right, everyone, I'm here with Duke the Dumpster Drosy on the Tape Trader's Guide to 90s Pro Wrestling. Duke, thank you for joining me today.
No problem. Thanks for having me.
So I wanted to ask you some questions about working for Autowance in Austria and Germany, and kind of just how that all came about.
Actually, I was living in Orlando at the time. It was after I left the World Wrestling Federation, and one of Bret Hart's brothers, Ross Hart, actually got me booked with Otto in a single shot. He brought me over, and I wrestled against their champion at the time, Rambo. And Otto decided he wanted to bring me back for the entire season, and they flew me back over, and I worked for him through the Austria dates and Graz and Vienna, as well as Hanover, Germany, and Bremen, Germany.
So, what is it like to work, you know, to go from working in America, you know, where you've always worked and everything, and going to a country and kind of doing that loop? I mean, was it different, or was it the same kind of thing, or...
It was completely different, actually, because in the States at the time, they would do a loop where you could wrestle pretty much the same match every night if you were feeling lazy. But over there, you would stay in the same building in the same town for 30 or 40 days straight, and you had to change up the game a lot each night and get very creative.
Was it more hard-hitting than the American style, or was it, you know... Wrestling is the same no matter where you do it or who you do it with.
I think you could say it was more of a grappling style over there and chain wrestling type wrestling over there. But of course, us American guys, we were doing whatever we wanted to do. We did the same thing we always did. Bounced around. The ring was a little hard, but it was okay. But I was over there. The year I was there, ECO was there. Wrestling was Pierre. And let me see. A guy named Rasta the Voodoo Man and some guy from Australia, they called him Mark the Hunter. They had a lot of characters. Fitz Finley was there, Robbie Brookside was there. So it was a fun place to work. We always had fun. The guys were always willing to try new things and get very creative.
Did you enjoy that kind of that atmosphere of being on a bus and kind of staying, everyone staying together for that whole season? Or was it, or do you prefer kind of like taking your own shot, like, you know, going here one day, going there one day, or did you enjoy that camaraderie of being around with everyone from town to town?
It was definitely different than the States. You know, in the States, like you said, we would wrestle in loops and get our rental cars and make each town and do our own thing, but over there, we were like a community, almost like gypsies. We all lived like around the building. A lot of folks lived in trailers out there, and some of us would live in hotels sometimes, but mainly we were all together out around the building, living in a little community together. So it was definitely fun, and you got to know everybody really well.
Were there any particular people that you happened to work with during that time period that you felt fortunate with working with, or was everyone just, you know, top notch?
I got to work with Fit Finley a few times, because that was back during the time he went to WCW the first time. I got to work with Terry Funk. They brought him in, and I wrestled him as the champion for Otto. Otto made me his champion here as well. Let me see. I got to wrestle this guy, Cannonball Grizzly, who used to be PN News in WCW. He's a hell of a wrestler, man. We had a blast. So, yeah, there was a lot of guys. I felt very fortunate to wrestle against.
And real quick, I wanted to kind of go into... you have such an awesome Facebook, such an awesome social media feed, you know, stories and everything like that. So I want to, you know, not ask you too many questions, because I want people to go to your Facebook and see the stuff themselves. But kind of talk about how you've kind of changed your life through the trials and tribulations that you've gone through, and you're clean and sober, and what that means to you, because a lot of people listening to this may be struggling with their own things or their own demons that they may have, and here you're someone that has really and honestly come out on the other side. I mean, you physically look better than you might have looked, you know, in 1995, 1996. Yeah, I mean, so you've really and honestly changed your life, and what does that mean to you, you know, if you can kind of just elaborate on that?
It was in 2013, it all came to a head. I was on drugs, had a lot of problems, and I ended up getting arrested. And I came to the realization that I really had to make an effort to change, and it was change everything, not just drugs. It was getting better physical health, work harder at being successful, and kind of open up. And, like, I had closed myself off from the fans and stuff. After all of that happened, I kind of branched out and started talking to fans again, and that's why the social media kind of started taking off, because I kind of reestablished a relationship with the wrestling fans through stories and other types of things that we do. So Yeah, it was very important to me to kind of just change everything at that point. And that's what I did, because I could have very easily been one of the many, many statistics in wrestling, one of the many, many guys that didn't make it. So I'm very fortunate in that respect.
And did you think that you would, you know, come back to wrestling? I mean, in 2013, when you were going through everything you were going through, and then when you, you know, after you, after the arrest, and after the sobering moment of saying, hey, I need to change, I need to make different life choices, did you think wrestling will still be there for me? Or did you think, oh, this is it, I need to walk away from this? And because, you know, not only are you sitting here with me about to do this autograph signing, but last year you had a number of matches as well, you know, in 2017 and 2018. I'm sorry, 2018, 2019. You had a number of matches as well. Did you know that this was something that was going to kind of blow up again when you decided, hey, I'm going to put myself out there? Or is it kind of surprising?
Well, it certainly was very surprising because of the fact that at my lowest point, I never thought I would be involved in wrestling again, because for a long time, I was very bitter towards the wrestling business in general. I felt like I had been done wrong, but part of me getting clean and sober and changing everything also meant me changing my attitude and my outlook. And one of the big ways I did that was to come to the realization that a lot of the things that happened to me in and out of the wrestling business were my own doing. And as soon as I started to take responsibility for that, then things started to change. And like I said, my relationship with the fans changed, and I started getting back into business, which I never thought I would do in a million years.
So let's kind of talk about your return to the inside the ring, because I have a friend who runs a show in Chattanooga, and he promoted that, you know, you were going to be there. And this is the first time that I'd seen your picture in years. And so the minute I saw him post that, I immediately jumped in his inbox and I said, do you have Duke's contact information? And he said, hit him up on Facebook, shoot him a message in Messenger. So I shot you a message. We worked out a deal to be in Georgia. And at the exact same time, once I promoted that you were going to be part of WrestleTopia, Ox Harley hit me up and he said, hey, is there any way Duke would want to get in the ring? And I said, I don't know. You know, I have no idea. I don't know what he can and can't do. I don't know what he'd be interested in doing. And at first, you weren't interested in getting in the ring, right? You didn't think that you'd be able to do it. And then he worked the deal out with you. And lo and behold, taking out the trash, 2018 happened. So kind of talk about how you decided, hey, I can still do this.
Well, another thing that happened back in 2013 with the arrest and all the other problems I was having is I had to have my left foot amputated. So in that respect, I never thought I would wrestle in the ring again. But as I moved forward in my recovery and got clean and sober and got physically healthy and got in the gym and started working out, I started to realize that I could move around quite a bit better than I thought I would be able to. So because of that, I started taking some wrestling bookings. Now, I will say, though, last year, at the end of last year, I had an issue with the leg where, mainly because of wrestling, I kind of got an infection and I had to have surgery, which I'm still dealing with now. So I don't know if I will get in the ring again. That is kind of up in the air. But as far as physically and being able to do the moves, I was able to do quite a bit.
Go ahead, man.
I got that.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I don't know. So, you know, I appreciate it, man. Kind of talk about being that match, that first time that you got back in the ring and you actually worked with someone. Was it the match with Ox? Was that your first match back in the ring? It was you and Ox versus Jeremiah Plunkett and Big Bad John in MSWA in Knoxville.
I don't think that was my first actual match back. I think I might have wrestled in Minville first. I was getting in a ring with somebody there and practicing. We had a ring for practice. But,
you know, house lane?
Yeah, I wrestled in McMinnville. I wrestled for Ox. And, I can't remember what it is right now. But I also wrestled in Pikeville quite a bit, which is kind of where the issue happened, where I realized my leg was kind of getting beat up too much. But, yeah, I wrestled in a few places, and it was definitely interesting. It was different. Like, I had to be very wary of the prosthetic foot because I tripped. I got stuck in the stairs one time. Going up in the stairs, I got stuck. So I had to be very careful. And then going out of the ring, falling out of the ring and stuff like that. I just had
right.
to be very, very wary of the titanium foot I was wearing. So
And do you prefer Rocco Gibraltar or Duke the Dumpster Drosty? Which one do you prefer personally?
There's a special place in my heart for the garbage band Rocco Gibraltar, because that's where the gimmick originated down in Miami, Florida. It was that name, the garbage band gimmick, that's where it all started. Duke the Dumpster was fun, and that's where the fans that know me now mainly knew me from, was my days in the World Wrestling Federation as Duke the Dumpster Drosty. But like I said, Rocco Gibraltar will always have a very special place in my heart.
Well, you were always one of my favorites, legitimately, not just, you know, because I'm working with you, but 1995, I would have been 14 years old, and you know, I loved the characters of wrestling, and I always thought, you know, like, man, I'd look at you and it's like, man, you're a big dude, you know, like, you don't look like my garbage man, like at my house, you know. So I appreciate you being here with us today, and if you wouldn't mind kind of throwing out your social media so people that may not already be following you have that opportunity to follow you.
Social media, my private Facebook page is Mike Drosty, and I have a Duke the Dumpster fan page as well on Facebook. My Instagram is Duke the Dumpster Official, and my Twitter is Real Duke Drosty.
Thank you very much. I appreciate everything, Duke.